welcome to The Signal. I'm Anastasia Payne.
And I'm Simon Smith. We're with the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism.
Today on the show, power problems in Coal Harbor create a dangerous situation for one family.
Sparks are flying out of that thing with kids walking up and down, getting off school and everything.
We'll hear how a fallen power line is making some question Nova Scotia Power's maintenance program.
And rats.
I got my barbecue tongs, and I actually had to pull the rats that were stuck in the hole and that were dead.
People in Woodlawn have had enough, and they're looking for the city to help with a rat infestation.
Plus, later, reclaiming a traditional Indigenous language.
It's just so powerful and profound. And it's almost like a longing, like almost like a grief process.
How Indigenous communities in the region are rediscovering culture through language. All that and more on today's show.
Some people in Woodlawn are fed up with Dartmouth's rat problem. They say their backyards have been taken over and their property destroyed.
That's right. Now they're calling for others to share their stories and put pressure on their district counselors to fix the problem. I visited one neighborhood in Woodlawn this week.
This here is all fresh.
Yeah, this was all cleaned out.
That's fresh poop right there.
Leslie Clements and Lloyd Jameson have been fighting a losing battle against their unwanted neighbors, the rats. The couple has spent hundreds of dollars on traps in the past year. Jameson contacted the municipality. They told him the rats on his property are his responsibility. Clements even found a rat's nest in the engine of her car and some chewed up wires. Last week, she came face to face with two rats when she opened the green bin. She posted in a community group on Facebook expressing her frustration and disgust.
Enough is enough. We put in enough money. We've had enough damage. And it was my blowing point.
Her post exploded with responses from neighbors who are just as fed up. Suzanne McLeod has lived in Woodlawn for 12 years. She recalls finding a rat's nest in her crawl space. She couldn't afford an exterminator. She poisoned the nest herself.
It was the most revolting thing I've ever had to do in my life. I got my barbecue tongs, and I actually had to pull the rats that were stuck in the hole and that were dead.
Since July, she's trapped 17 rats in her yard. McLeod says she's called local counselors Becky Kent and Tony Mancini. She encourages others to do the same. Mancini told her council is looking into the possibility of a rodent rebate program that would give households money every year to cover the cost of traps. And he thinks Halifax Water could help.
You know, I would love for them to get involved in the education. I would love for them to make some attempts of baiting the sewer. If they're worried about the environment, well, you know, let them put some resources in to try to find a solution that would help to keep them under control.
But Clements says a $200 rebate isn't enough. People still have to clear traps, which means they're exposed to unnecessary health risks. Meanwhile, everyone agrees there's a need for community education, telling people to keep their yards clear of brush and garbage and keep green bins away from the house. But there's no official plan to start a campaign yet, and no word on that rebate.
In 2020, there was an unplanned power outage somewhere in Nova Scotia every day of the year. That's according to a months-long investigation by CBC Nova Scotia. For one family in Coal Harbor, that's played out in a potentially dangerous way. As Preet Bogle tells us, the power issue recently landed, quite literally, in their driveway.
When Bree Hillary and Luke Kelly saw sparks come out of the power lines in front of their Coal Harbor home, they called Nova Scotia Power.
It sparked and crackled and popped and banged over the last 2 years now, at least. We called about it twice.
The first time it happened, power crews came out and trimmed the trees.
I had to call a couple of times because it was 2:30 in the afternoon and sparks were flying out of that thing with kids walking up and down, getting off school and everything. And they finally came out and they put that little twist tie thing that you see there in it. And
the twist tie thing was a device to keep the wires from touching and sparking. It helped. Mostly. Then on a normal, cloudy Nova Scotia day, Luke heard a bang outside of the house.
And there was another bang, then it went off, and it just seemed really weird, so I got up and looked outside, and I could see the power line hanging down over the other power lines there.
Kelly says if Bree hadn't just backed the car out of the driveway, the line could have fallen across it. It was a major line, so the power was out for almost 4 hours for 5,000 residents in the area. It was the second Sunday in a row with a power outage. In a letter to Cole Harbour councillor Trish Purdy, Nova Scotia Power said that the outage was caused by, quote, an unexpected malfunction of an inline switch. It was unrelated to the power failure from the Sunday before. Leah McDonald is Nova Scotia Power's Vice President of Transmission, Distribution, and Delivery. She says the corporation spends $100 million a year maintaining and upgrading its lines and equipment.
Even with all that proactive planning to get at equipment and vegetation issues before they cause problems, those can still occur.
McDonald says in the case of the failed inline switch, she's not sure whether it was related to the sparking that Kelly witnessed. Since Sunday, residents have seen power crews around Cole Harbour and the power has stayed on. But Bree Hillary questions whether the crews are trained to spot potential problems.
What's worrisome is that they have been here at this property, looked at this equipment over the last 2 years, obviously, as we've had them here ourselves, and no one thought once that anything was wrong with the gear.
So Hillary and Kelly won't be relying solely on Nova Scotia Power. They've bought a generator and installed a backup power system, just in case. For The Signal, I'm Preet Bogle in Cole Harbour.
People who use a popular car share service in Halifax are breathing a sigh of relief. Commune Auto was the victim of a ransomware attack, a type of malicious software that holds computer files hostage for money. But as Avery Mullen tells us, there's been a surprisingly happy outcome.
Last week, people who use Commune Auto Atlantic got some upsetting emails. The company said their personal information had been hacked. But more surprisingly, Commune Auto appears to have successfully negotiated with the hackers to protect users' privacy. Marco Viviani is Commune Auto's Vice President of Strategic Development. He says his company hired a specialized cybersecurity firm to get its computer system back up and running, and the firm decided to negotiate.
That company, during this work of restoration and so on, suggested they could have negotiated something with the hacker in order to, you know, recover some of the data and so on.
As part of the cyber attack, the hackers might have had access to some customers' names, street addresses, and email addresses, but not credit card numbers. The firm hired by Commune Auto believes it successfully convinced the hackers to delete any possible copies of customers' data. Eric Ross is a regular user of Commune Auto.
So my stress level went way down, and I was kind of left with a feeling of like, okay, they're being really proactive. They're able to reassure me, and you know, I have confidence in the company that they're doing okay.
That's good luck. A report by cybersecurity firm MSysSoft estimates that ransomware attacks may have cost Canadian companies as much as $2.3 billion last year. Nur Sinjir Haywood is a professor at Dalhousie's Faculty of Computer Science. She specializes in cybersecurity. She says Commune Auto's experience is a byproduct of how valuable and often indispensable databases used by many companies are. She says individual users can help protect themselves from cyber attacks by limiting how much information they share online.
The less personal data we put out on the cyber world, it is going to make the attacker choosing us as a target less, because there isn't much out there for them to make money out of.
If enough users do that, it will discourage attackers by making cybercrime less profitable. For The Signal, I'm Avery Mullen.
Vendors at the Halifax Seaport Market are mixed in their response to news it will be moving. The longest continuously running farmers market in North America isn't going far, just two doors down, but it will mean big changes for how it operates. Earlier this week, I talked to some people who have made the market a regular part of their lives and businesses.
Sausages, deli meat, sausages, bacon, wow.
This YouTube video captures the sounds of the Halifax Seaport Market in better times. Before the pandemic, the Halifax Seaport Market was a popular weekend destination for locals and visitors. It's quieter now, and last week the Port Authority announced the market would move. Dave Belt co-owns Seafoam Lavender Company and sells his products at the Seaport Market. He says the announcement wasn't a total surprise. With business down because of COVID, something had to give. Belt's looking forward to the move. The smaller space will make it easier for customers to find his stall.
It's very easy to miss someone. I can't tell you how many times as a vendor, people have found me and been startled and said, oh, I've been looking all over for you. I had no idea this is where you were.
The Port Authority says the market will be in Pavilion 22 in the winter months and outdoors in the spring and summer. The current space will be used as an innovation hub for the transportation industry. Jamie Feldman does a majority of her shopping at the Seaport Market. She says it's an easy way to support local vendors in the city. When Feldman heard about the move, she was shocked and disappointed.
I guess I felt that I was wrongly led to believe that that building belonged to the community.
Originally, the market opened as a cooperative, with some money raised through public donations. It was eventually taken over by the Port Authority. Feldman says moving the market will make her think twice before donating to community initiatives like the Seaport Market.
It seems to be an increasing pattern of the city not supporting community initiatives in exchange for business initiatives.
Lane Ferguson speaks for the Port Authority. He says it had been looking for a more sustainable model for the market for over a year.
Really, for years now, it has it's always been a very successful weekend market, weekend destination, and people love that experience. But it's struggled during the week to find enough foot traffic, really, to make it sustainable.
He says a search for a new market operator who could help bring in business on weekdays was wiped out by the pandemic. Ferguson says the Port Authority hopes the new location can offer a sustainable solution for the weekend market. And of course, farmers markets are often associated with music. There's usually a guitar or banjo somewhere among the produce. Here's American songwriter Tom Chapin with Farmers Market Good.
It's early morning, not quite four. The farmer's up and out the door. On little farms all through the state, they're loading bushel, box and crate, and while you're sleeping safe and sound, the farmer's driving to your town, bringing fresh grown, fresh picked food your way as the sun wakes up the day. At the farmer's market, close to home, all the food you'll find there is locally grown. Like a farm once a week in your neighborhood, it's Farmer's Market Good. And in the park, some local gents set up the tables and some tents. The little trucks come rolling in, and soon the market can begin. Flour straight from the flower bed, and some fragrant, still warm bread. Fruits and veggies of every shape and size, and delicious home-baked pies. At the Farmer's Market, close to home, all the food you'll find there is locally grown. Like a farm once a week in your neighborhood, it's Farmer's Market Good. Good for your breakfast, good for your lunch, good for your dinner too. Good for the farmer, good for the family, best of all, good for you. The market changes every week, depending what crop's at its peak. First is rhubarb, lettuce, peas, then spinach and strawberries. Local peaches are so nice, watermelon by the slice, heirloom tomatoes, corn so tall, and apples in the fall. Good for your breakfast, good for your lunch, good for your dinner too. Good for the farmer, good for the family, best of all, good for you. So if it's still a bit too hard to try and till your whole backyard, there is a place right down the street where all your savvy neighbors meet. And like the seeds that the farmers sow, your whole community will grow. 'Cause beside all the best that the farmer sends, you'll find a brand new crop of friends. At the farmer's market, close to home, all the food you'll find there is locally grown. Like a farm once a week in your neighborhood, it's Farmer's Market. Farmer's Market. Good for the farmer, good for your family. Farmer's Market Good.
Tom Chapin singing up the virtues of farmer's markets. You're listening to The Signal on CKDU, 88.1 FM in Halifax, and at SignalHFX on Twitter. We're bringing you stories from the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism. I'm Simon Smith.
And I'm Anastasia Payne. Still to come on the show, there's no baby kissing on the campaign trail this year, how politicians are connecting during the pandemic.
Hey folks, welcome to a live episode of Ask Tim, live from Pictou County. I'm going to try to get this camera here right.
How political life goes on in the run-up to the Liberal leadership vote and beyond.
And we'll hear about how an Indigenous community in the region is finding connection through language.
It's like going into a library and picking up a history book. When you sit down and speak with an elder, word of mouth history.
Plus, we'll meet the man who's been camping outside of Province House in downtown Halifax and find out about his protest.
The pandemic has changed the way we do many things. But how do you run for an election when you need to social distance and can't hold events like rallies? Josh Hoffman has been looking at that.
I'm running to be the leader of the Liberal Party of Nova Scotia.
COVID-19 has made it impossible for politicians to shake hands and kiss babies, but political life goes on. The province's Liberal Party will elect a new leader on February 6. Three candidates have been campaigning for months while following public health protocols. Randy Delory is one of them, and the MLA for Antigonish.
When I saw the second wave coming in mid-November, probably 2 days before the public health protocols kicked in, I actually announced that I was going fully virtual.
We're talking on Zoom. It's one of the many tools Delory uses to try to connect with potential voters. He also has a strong presence on social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and even TikTok.
Top 8 reasons Randy Delory should be the leader of the Nova Scotia Liberal Party.
Delory says an upside is he's able to talk to people all over the province.
On the other hand, I live in rural Anakinish. I don't have adequate broadband to connect with stable connections with people. So there's a disadvantage of relying so heavily on virtual connectivity.
Whoever becomes the next leader of the Liberals will have to deal with virtual campaigning all over again. A provincial election is scheduled for the spring, but the pandemic may delay it to the summer or even into 2022.
Hey folks, welcome to a live episode of Ask Tim, live from Pictou County. I'm going to try to get this camera here right.
Tim Houston is the leader of the official opposition, the Progressive Conservatives, and the MLA for Pictou East. In this video, Houston is hosting a Q&A on Facebook. It's one of many weekly videos Houston puts on his social media. On Monday nights, he hosts a Zoom open to anyone who wants to ask him a question. Tuesday's Zoom meeting is focused specifically on policy.
It's always been important to me that people know that they can reach out to me, that they can talk to me.
Houston believes campaigning during a pandemic just takes a lot of planning.
That will mean doing the research before to make sure we're talking to all the groups from the various parts of the community. And then telling them, you know, working with them, we're going to be in your community on this date. How can we or can we get together?
Houston and Delory do agree you can't replace the face-to-face interaction. But they won't let a pandemic get in the way of a good campaign. For The Signal, I'm Josh Hoffman.
It's cold on the streets of Halifax, but Jacob Fillmore isn't letting that stop his protest on behalf of the environment. If you've walked past the legislature recently, you've seen him out front. For the last 4.5 weeks, he's slept outside of government buildings, calling out the province for what he calls its lack of action on environmental issues. And he says he won't be stopping until he sees change. Alex Johnson reports from the sidewalk outside Province House.
In front of Province House, Jacob Fillmore sleeps under a wooden protest sign.
I think that I could make a long list of demands for the province. But I've got a couple good places to start.
He wants an end to clear cutting until all of the recommendations from the Leahy Report are implemented. Fillmore was inspired by activists in Digby County. They blockaded a road until they were removed by court injunction in December. He spent some time with them in November.
When I heard about the injunction that was served to them, that really upset me.
Fillmore wanted to help. So he grabbed his tent and sleeping bag and headed out for Grand Parade in front of Halifax City Hall.
When I left my house for Grand Parade, I didn't have any money, I had no food, and I had no water. So I was not well prepared for such a long, sustained campaign.
But people have dropped off food, drinks, and other supplies to keep him going.
It's been very, very encouraging. I would not be sitting here talking to you, I don't think, if I hadn't had the support of all of the folks who have supported me.
The city told Fillmore last week that he had to leave Grand Parade. So, he just moved his stuff down to the provincial legislature.
Like if I asked her, are you hungry?
And he's not enduring the cold alone anymore. Heather Moore and her dog Moon have joined the protest. Moore is a grandmother and has been an environmentalist since she was 14. She said she was inspired to join Fillmore because she was a homeless street kid for part of her life and knows what it's like to be out in the cold.
I had a lot of sympathy for this guy hanging out by himself, doing it by himself. It's friggin' cold out here. The least he could use is some company.
She visited Fillmore while he was camped out at City Hall. She joined him when he moved to Province House.
I think he's stubborn and gutsy. I think of him like a little brother now, I guess.
Despite the hardships, Fillmore doesn't plan on leaving anytime soon.
I think I'm going to be out here as long as it takes till I see a substantial change and until I feel like my future is no longer in jeopardy.
For The Signal, I'm Alex Johnson.
Some local businesses in Halifax have been trying new ways to connect with customers during the pandemic. But establishing an online presence isn't necessarily easy. A new marketing initiative to help them launch just before Christmas season. Raghu Para checked in to see how it worked.
The COVID situation makes it impossible to have contact with locals.
Joyce Adams says an important goal of her Simply Go Natural cosmetics business is to connect with local customers in Halifax. With many shoppers staying home since the pandemic, she says it was important to find ways to take the connection online.
Getting access to the locals were important to be able to build credibility in the community and also to expand.
Adam is one of 31 local businesses that signed on to a new online program that connects local businesses with the customers in their community. She says it was extremely helpful.
Gave us exposure. More exposure, hoping to reach more people and to get people to be comfortable to buy online from us, knowing that we are local.
The Access Local program is a partnership between the Economic Development Group Halifax Partnership and a social enterprise platform called VLife. They announced the program in October. Nancy Phillips is the Vice President of Investment and Trade at Halifax Partnership. She's been helping many businesses sign up for the program.
One of our local startups called VLife, they have an online, like an app that connects the local sellers to the local buyers. Because there are a lot of people during COVID that want to do whatever they can to support purchasing local.
They use a website and social media to support 80 small independent businesses in Halifax with online marketing and sales. Melanie Little is the CEO of VLife.
So there's a real growing desire on the buy local side of things to find more ways to spend their money locally. So coming to VLife allows people to do that.
VLife promotes the businesses for free so people in the community can learn about them. For Joyce Adam, it made all the difference with cosmetic sales on Black Friday and over the Christmas season.
They broadcast it on their platforms, on Twitter, so it helps spread the word.
She says it was hard to track the amount of social media marketing, but she thinks the publicity came in pretty handy during Christmas. Little agrees the holiday season was a success, and she believes the program has a future. For The Signal, I'm Raghu Para.
Across the country, Indigenous people are taking action to reclaim their traditional languages. Here in the Maritimes, Eskasoni in Cape Breton has a Mi'kmaq immersion school. And at the Kingsclear First Nation in New Brunswick, the community has started a language revitalization program. It's centered around a new Wolastoqe language class. As Nicholas Seguin reports, it's helping to spearhead a language movement it hopes will be followed by other communities in the region.
Can you say, listen to me again?
Jiksudawin.
Jiksudawin?
Jiksudawin.
Kiara Grubin spends 3 hours a week at the Wolastoqe Letowawagen, a language class in her community.
When you hear the language being spoken,
I can't explain it. It's just so powerful and profound. And it's almost like a longing, like almost like a grief process.
Wolastoqe is the traditional language of the Wolastoqawiyuk, the people of the beautiful Bountiful River. They were previously known as the Maliseet, but are now reclaiming the traditional name of their nation. Grubin started going to the class as a participant and is now overseeing it as part of her role as a prevention social worker in the community. The class was started by Kingsclear Child and Family Services last September. It's set to run for 3 years, and it's free for community members of all ages and levels.
If I said, listen to the radio, Jigsidmon, Labak de Hegan, Jigsidmon.
Jigsidmon.
Victor Atwin is one of the three teachers and is among only a handful of fluent, lifelong speakers in the community. When he was growing up, there was no English spoken in his home. He sees his biggest role as passing on the language, and he says the class is a step in doing so.
Just the sharing of the language, knowing there's people that are interested in learning it, and realizing the fact that the language is in jeopardy.
The Wolastoqe language is in danger of disappearing because of assimilation attempts, including residential schools. The last census in 2016 reported around 350 people speak the language, but it's about more than just words.
When we think of our elders that are fluent, they have like such amazing stories of what kinship was like. Sitting around the table at like the feet of their elders and just only hearing the Wolastoqe. And there's a certain generation where that stopped.
Grubin says sometimes during the class, she tries to frantically write down everything Atwin says because she knows she might not hear these stories again. The language itself is pure history.
It's like going into a library and picking up a history book. When you sit down and speak with an elder, word of mouth history.
Milan.
Give me.
Kaho. Kaho. Bed.
Gohod.
Gohod. Hey.
Crystal Wilkes is 16 years old. She goes to the class every week. She says people are surprised to see someone her age showing an interest, but she knows it's important to learn her language.
I knew our language wasn't spoken often, and when it was taken from us, they weren't allowed to speak our language, so I would like to speak her language in honor of those people.
But Atwin says there are few opportunities to practice.
That's the sad part. There are no people left old enough in the community that are able to converse in the language. So I have a difficult time trying to find people to converse with.
He hopes that's changing now, and says learning the language also allows people to find a connection to their traditional culture.
The culture is the language. The language is the culture. And that's how the knowledge and the culture is passed on, through stories.
And for Grubin, there's even more.
It's almost healing in a sense, healing from that disconnection and reminding us that that's the way, is to learn and figure out who we are, what did we come here to do, not individually, but collectively.
There are about 30 students now. They're hoping the success of the program will lead to long-term funding dollars that could allow for further programs like immersion classes in schools and daycares in the community. Meanwhile, Grubin hopes that when her three-year-old daughter is grown, she will be fluent in the language. For The Signal, I'm Nicola Sagan.
Thankful for language. Grandmothers and grandfathers, thank you for our language that you have saved for us. It is now our turn to save it for the ones who are not born yet. May that be the truth.
That's our show for today.
If there's anything you want to hear again, we post links to our stories on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is SignalHFX.
Thanks to our technician, Mark Pinio, on the control room.
Our audio professor is Pauline Dakin. I'm Anastasia Payne.
And I'm Simon Smith. We'll be back next week with more stories. Have a great weekend.